Hello, and welcome to History in Reverse, a father-daughter science fiction podcast. Today, we will be discussing The Hunger Games, the first book, by Suzanne Collins. My name is Caroline, and I'm here with my father, Richie.
Hello.
And we are continuing our project to read and discuss a science fiction book. We are currently working on dystopian novels, and this time we have read the first book of the Hunger Games series called The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. For spoiler warnings, probably going to be talking about the two subsequent books as well, and the movies here and there, but we'll be mostly focusing on the first one.
Right.
So before we jump in, I think you had some things to add about some previous books we read.
Right, so we read Return from the Stars, which was about an astronaut who comes back to Earth 200 years in the future. Now, since then, I had read a book by H.G. Wells called The Sleeper Awakes. And in that book, there is a guy who falls asleep in end of 19th century and wakes up 200 years in the future.
That sounds familiar.
So the interesting difference between the two, that in Return from the Stars, when the guy came back 200 years in the future, nobody cared. In Sleeper Awakes, when he woke up 200 years in the future, he turned out he was the owner of the entire world.
Oh.
And he was the ruler of the entire world. And there were some interesting political implications of him being awake all of a sudden. Anyway,
that
was kind of amusing.
It's kind of similar. It's interesting to see the books that are kind of time travel books, but I guess maybe they're more like time skip books. Like there's more like a time skip into the future.
What's interesting is like what kind of stuff he predicts in the future. You know, H.G. Wells. So he had flying machines, but no telephones. They had some kind of cool transportation system where you can get a cigar from Florida to England in 2 hours. And even with flying, it was kind of funny because he was a little bit off. Like he said, from London to Paris, it was like, you know, 40 minutes. And from London to New York, it was 2 hours.
Almost. Not quite. I wonder, did any book ever predict the internet? That's the big one that they never seem to have. Even like Star Trek doesn't have like any kind
there
of...
There were some in this cyberpunk kind of genre. There's John Brenner has a book called Shockwave Rider. And that kind of predicted the idea of the network, kind of like the internet. It was written in the 60s, maybe? I don't remember.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so today we're talking about The Hunger Games. Before we jump into it, maybe just describe both of our experiences with The Hunger Games, because we both... Did you read this before? No, this is the first time
I read it. No, I never read the book. I saw the movie first, and you know, a while ago when it came out. And then...
Yeah, I was the same way. So I saw the movie first, absolutely loved it. And I was like the right age group when it came out in like 2011.
Yeah, that's why we have some bows and arrows around the house.
Yeah, we do. I loved it when it came out. I think I must have been 18 or 19 when it came out. And after seeing the movie, picked up the books, sped read through the books, and found myself not really that impressed with the books, which was weird because I'm a big book snob and I'm usually a big, like, the books are better person, and I don't think I'm that person with the Hunger Games series. And I think that a lot of Hunger Games fans would disagree with me very adamantly. But then I read the trilogy, the three books, and then I went back and reread just the first one because that is my favorite one, and then I've just reread it, or I've just re-listened to the audiobook this time. And I've got to say, I highly recommend the audiobook. Right, the person who reads the audiobook is named Tatiana Maslany, and she does a fantastic job.
Maybe I'll listen to it too.
Highly recommend. It almost masks the really bad writing of the story. But I remember reading it and really not being impressed with the prose. And I think it's something we're probably going to talk about after we get through like the basic gist of the story.
Well, should we talk a little bit about Suzanne Collins? We just looked her up.
Looked her up on Wikipedia. This is all of our knowledge came from there. So she's most known for The Hunger Games. Prior to The Hunger Games, she was known for The Outlander. Was it?
Underworld.
Underworld, sorry. Wrong word. The Underworld series,
But she also wrote for some shows in Nickelodeon that you watched.
Yeah, she wrote for several Nickelodeon shows. Clarissa Explains It All, Oswald, Shelby Woo, which I really liked when I was a kid. So she's got good experience writing for children. and did have that the Underworld series, which is about, from I've heard of it before, it's about like a giant or something. It's really like a fantastical kind of thing. But obviously, you know, made it big with The Hunger Games.
Right.
And then they made the movies out of the Hunger Games books. I've always found the plot and the concept of The Hunger Games to be really entertaining and really interesting. And my problem with the series has been, and my guesses will continue to be, is the writing is just not at a caliber that I think is good enough for the story it's telling, frankly. And becomes worse as the series progresses.
Well, I can't say
in my opinion
much about the writing, but because I saw the movie first, you know, usually when you read a book, you try to visualize what the author is trying to describe. Mm. And because I saw the movie first, I had all the images already, right? So it was kind of, I did not find there were any like strong standard descriptions of anything in the book.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely true. And so one of the things that we should touch on is that the style of the book is sort of unique. It's first person, very narrow point of view of Katniss Everdeen, our main character, and it's in the present tense. Did you notice?
But I mean, yeah, wasn't Star Diaries the same? Not Star Diaries, Return from the Stars, I mean.
No.
It was told from the point of view of Hal. Mostly.
Yes, but it was in the past tense. So the present tense, I forgot to ask Mom what it's called. I think it's called the historical tense. I could be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. But it's basically, so instead of saying, you know, Katniss sat in the chair and ate her cereal, it says, I sit on my chair and drink and eat my cereal. You know, so in it sort of is interesting in those moments where there's sort of the fighting happening in the arena.
Right.
Because it gives it a more immediate feel. And a more, like, you're present in the moment kind of feel. But it's definitely difficult for a novel-length story. Where, by nature of there being chapters, the thing you've just told is now in the past.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's I've always found it kind of jarring. I know plenty of people don't mind it whatsoever.
Didn't particularly notice it.
Yeah. But the bigger thing being the close point of view to Katniss, which I think works very well in the first Hunger Games book, and does not translate so well to the other two. So let's talk through the plot. Who is Katniss?
So Katniss Everdeen is this girl who lives in this place called the Seam, which is this kind of poor area of coal miners, I guess. Mm-hmm. Seam must refer to seam of coal, I would guess. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And so how old is she? You said she's 16.
16, yeah.
And basically the kind of poor people living in this seam area that's kind of fenced in there seems to be some government forces kind of keeping them down. They're very poor. And one of the things that she does, something that her father taught her, is to sneak out beyond the fence into the wilderness to go hunting. Mm-hmm. And she's really good with the bow and arrow. Mm-hmm. Again, this is a bow, first bow like her father made, some fancy bow. Mm-hmm. And she can, like, you know, when she gets a rabbit, she can hit it in the eye.
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, right. And we learn that she lives in the Seam, which is a part of a district called District 12.
Right, so her father is dead, so her father died in a mining accident. So she lives with her mother and
her sister
Prim. Mm-hmm. And we learn from her that her mother basically kind of became almost catatonic after the father's death. She had like serious mental problems.
Right.
And Katniss kind of was forced to hold everything together for quite a while before her mother kind of came out of it.
Right. So Katniss's father dies, I believe, when Katniss is 11. And the mom does spiral into this depression, and so Katniss, and basically they get to a point where they almost starve.
Right.
Right, chronologically speaking. So the story's kind of told to us pretty much chronologically, but Katniss has flashbacks and things like that. But just to tell the story chronologically, at this point, when she's almost starving one day, she goes, like, scrounging through some trash bins and stuff by this bakery, and she's getting shooed away by the baker who's telling her to leave. She, you know, she's sitting at the bottom of a tree in the rain, she's almost dead, and this boy comes out and gives her bread and throws bread at her. Doesn't look at her, but throws bread in her direction. And she's able to get the bread and feed herself and her mom that night, and then the next day kind of like spring breaks, more or less, and she realizes that they can survive off of the food in the forest.
Right.
And that's kind of like her turning point. Right. At that point.
And so then, she runs a little business by, you know, hunting and selling squirrels and rabbits.
And the police that are present in District 12 are called the Peacekeepers.
Right.
And the peacekeepers kind of turn a blind eye to the fact that she's illegally hunting because they also buy the food that she brings in. And so she's able to sell that stuff. So the story starts on the morning, in the morning of a very important day.
Right.
Which is the...
Reaping day.
The reaping day. And she wakes up and she's going to go out hunting with her friend, Gail.
Gail.
In the woods. Right?
Right.
So, do you want to describe when she meets up with Gail?
They just meet by whatever, where the hole in the fence is. So, mm-hmm. And they go up and go into the, in the woods and they do some hunting. They kind of hang out and say, well, wouldn't it be nice? Maybe we should just run away from this place and then we can live off the land.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, kind of dreaming. I think they catch some fish. Then they go back.
Right. And then they go back and they get dressed up and ready for the reaping day.
So what is the reaping day?
So the reaping day, we find out, is the day that two tributes from each district are selected to participate in the Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games are kind of gladiator-style games that are televised, where they take two kids from each district between the ages of 12 and 18.
Right.
And put them in an arena, and whoever is the last survivor wins.
Right, and the arena is kind of an environment that could be anything at all. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think they mentioned some of this, where there was like maybe in a desert or maybe in woods or something.
Mm-hmm. And one year there was like an ice one. The idea being that the game makers, the people that are designing the game, want it to be entertaining. So they don't want, you know, our characters think about the fact that the year that there was like all ice, for example, half the tributes froze to death. It wasn't entertaining for the
audience. Right, so the entertainment is that the tributes have to kill each other until there's one left.
Mm-hmm.
And that the one is declared the winner.
Right. And this is the 74th Hunger Games, so we know this has been going on at this point for 74 years. So Reaping Day is the day that the children are chosen. And as Katniss gets dressed up, her sister Prim gets dressed up, it's Prim's first time.
Right, so I think the way she describes the way it works, there's like a little ball with the people's names.
Yeah.
Kids' names. And the first year, you only get one name, and that remains. And next year, you get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So like at the end, as time goes on, your chances of getting picked get a little bit larger.
Right, exactly. Unless you're very poor and you need extra food. In which case, you could put in for extra food, which I believe they call the tesserae.
Right, that's right. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and if you put in for extra food with the government, they...
I think you put your name in extra times or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you ask for extra food and they give it to you, the payment is that you put your name in extra times.
Right.
You can do it once you turn 12, and you could do it once a month, each month on what would be your birthday, basically. So Katniss's birth, she mentions it's like May something. So she does it. And they just give you, like, some grain and stuff.
Right.
It's, like, not a lot. So, Katniss's name is in 20-some-odd times in the bowl. Gail, who has multiple younger siblings, his name is in there like 40 or 50 times, something like that. He's got like a huge number. And he's 18 at this point, so he's... At the last year, he could possibly be picked, and at the most number of chances there can be.
So, what's the backstory for this Hunger Games thing? Right, so we don't quite find out... Because Katniss doesn't read.
Yeah, in all these science fiction books, somebody sits down and reads a book about history, but she remembers her history class, which is similar. I mean, basically, it seems like there were 13 districts.
Right.
And then...
There was some kind of revolution in District 13,
mm-hmm.
and it was suppressed by the capital, whoever they are.
Right.
And to punish everybody else... keep them, reminding them that there should be no more revolutions, they instituted these Hunger Games where each district sends, you know, two kids basically as the tributes, and they fight to the death, and there's one winner, and I think the district that wins gets something.
They get like, so yeah, they get like extra food and stuff for a little while, and obviously the winner gets to be all rich and famous and stuff like that.
Well, not dead.
Not dead. Yeah, and you and I were kind of talking about this before, that the connection between... The capital doesn't want the districts to rebel, so they're going to make the Hunger Games so that the districts remember not to rebel. It's kind of tenuous, and it's one of the main premises of the story.
Right. It doesn't quite kind of make sense. Like, you know, what if the districts decided not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, some of the districts are the districts that do grow food, so what if they decided to keep it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's I don't know. There is not enough information, right?
Right. Well, I think one of the things is that the districts aren't allowed to communicate with each other. So maybe that keeps down some rebellion. But we're also unclear about exactly what the populations are, because like you pointed out, when they go to the reaping day, everybody fits in like the town square. All the kids between 12 and 18 just kind of like fit in the town square.
Yeah, like, so, in the movie it's a few hundred at most, so it's like how small are these districts?
Right, because is it like the size of a state, or is it like...
So I was looking up some stuff online, and they had a map of America, basically. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a district was like the size of a state. So there's probably more than a few hundred kids between 12 and 18.
Yeah. Well, like, so we're in New Jersey, so we would be District 12.
No, District 12 was Appalachia. So that's like West Virginia, those areas. That's where the coal is.
Well, we would be closest to District 12. We would be, but I think technically on the Pan Am map, we would be underwater. Because the Pan Am map accounts for like rising seas and stuff like that. There is a map that exists. But so they go to Reaping Day, and everybody's nervous, you know, because they could be picked for the reaping.
So what's the name of the woman who... Effie Trinket. Effie Trinket.
Who's played in the movie by, I believe, Elizabeth Banks, and she does a fantastic job. She's so good as Effie Trinket. The casting for the movie was very good in terms of ability, but we'll talk about some other issues with the casting later. Yeah, Effie Trinket
Hamish
comes.
Is there.
Yes, Hamish. Who's Hamish?
Hamish is a person from District 12, District 12, who had won the Hunger Games in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of involved with this reaping and stuff, but he seems to be more into just getting drunk and falling over.
Right. Which kind of, I think, is a good foreshadowing device for what it's like to win.
Yeah.
Right. And everyone's kind of like, you know, oh, Hamish is just like this drunk and he's an embarrassment and all these things. But no one in the story, even Katniss really, at least in this book, really stops to think about like why he's like that.
Well, right, she doesn't think that in the beginning.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the game, she starts to think about that.
Yeah.
What it would be like
right.
to be the winner mm-hmm. and what it means. Yeah.
So, reaping starts, and I want an interesting term, too, the reaping day. I love, like, some of the language used for different things, peacekeepers, mm-hmm. reaping day, hunger games, things like that is very, like, dystopia propaganda. And I think it's great. So like, the Reaping Day is really good.
But Peacekeepers, that's a typical kind of a name. Yeah, Reaping Day is a little bit more.
There's like some real like dark things in the story, which I like. So.
So they pick a girl first, you know, first.
And who is it?
It's Prim.
Uh-oh.
Prim is Katniss' sister, who just turned 12.
Mm-hmm. Whose name is in the bowl once.
Right.
And she gets picked. And everyone's kind of upset by it. Because everybody gets upset when a 12-year-old gets picked, because it's kind of unfair, right? It's like their name's only in there once, this is their first time, etc.
Right.
So Prim starts to head up towards the stage, and what does Katniss do?
Katniss says, "No, I volunteer." She. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, okay, great. Volunteers are welcome." Mm-hmm. So Prim goes back, and I think Gale actually has to pry her Prim mm-hmm. off Katniss,
right? Yep.
And bring her back, and Katniss goes up on the stage.
Right. So Katniss takes her sister's place, and then Peeta is picked. Peeta
right.
Mallark.
Right.
Who is the baker's boy who had given Katniss that bread.
5 years earlier.
Yeah. And I think actually now is when we get the flashback about the bread, as at the point in time
probably,
on the stage.
Yeah.
We don't get it chronologically. So yeah, so then they're picked, and they have to go...
To the Capitol.
And there's like a series of where they get to say goodbye to various
people.
I think
the baker actually brings us something.
Peeta's father, and I find this really interesting, and I wish the book was more like a piece of literature so that this had some meaning, or I'm like trying to pull something out of it. Peeta's father comes and visits Katniss.
Right.
He doesn't say anything. He gives her a bag of cookies.
Right.
And like they don't have any kind of conversation. We learn later, much, much later in the story, that Peeta's father had been in love with Katniss's mother.
Right.
But Katniss's mother had, you know, married someone else.
Yeah.
And Peeta's father ends up having this, like, horrible wife that they refer to as, like, a witch and stuff like that. And she's mean and she hits...
Same.
Yeah, she's really... She's the one that was yelling at Katniss to get away. She hits Peeta. She's, like, quite abusive, yeah. So I don't know... I don't know what that means. Like, he came to see her and... Gave her cookies and when he promises to make sure that Prim won't starve.
Right.
Because one of the things is, you know, if Katniss is going, who's going to be providing food?
Right.
And she knows, you know, Gale will help, of course. But then there's also these other people that are promising to help as well. And she gets a visit from the mayor's daughter. Do you remember that?
Right, and she gives her the pin, Mockingjay pin.
Yeah, so the golden Mockingjay pin.
Is that at this point they talk about Mockingjays and all that coming?
Not till much later. Okay, they do that so in the arena. Yeah, she gives her a pin that's it's like a gold circle with a Mockingjay on it. And the tributes are allowed to wear like a token from their district.
Right.
So the mayor's daughter says, you know, will you wear this? And Katniss says, yeah, okay, no problem. So then they're whisked away.
Right, they go on a train. Mm-hmm. They take a train trip to the capital. Mm-hmm. It takes a few days.
Yep. And it's so fancy.
Right, so they get all the food, and I think Katniss is a little bit difficult at the beginning with Haymitch, and he's supposed to advise them how to survive, right?
But all he is being drunk all the time.
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things on the train is that they encounter their first meals, like capital-style meals, and the food is luxurious, and they have hot chocolate for the first time, and Katniss, like, loves hot chocolate. And they eat and eat and eat. And it's, I think, kind of the first hint you get that the poverty that the districts are feeling, which you learn about throughout the book, is purposefully imposed as opposed to a necessary issue.
Right.
You know, that there is, you know, Katniss describes not having enough food and plenty of people in District 12 starving. And she describes other things like they would only get electricity for a few hours a night in District 12. But as you get closer to the capital and you see the things getting fancier and the technologies and stuff, it's apparent they have the resources. They're just not sharing them.
Or the hoarding them.
Yeah. Weird that would happen in a country.
Huh. So well, kind of like, you know, if you look at the colonial powers, that's kind of exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's a scene. So I was reading the book. I was looking up like scenes from the movie that kind of covered the particular thing. There's a scene on the train where she's kind of having an argument with Haymitch, and he said, you know, if you want to survive, first step you have to do is be nice, because you're not going to get any sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was that in the book as well?
Yeah, so the sponsor system is like, once you're in the arena, they can send you stuff, medicine, tools, food, they can send it to you, but people on the outside need to be paying for it. And if nobody likes you, and nobody wants you to win, they're not going to be sending you anything. So Haymitch is like, yeah, you got to be nicer. I think, is that when Katniss stabs the table? Because Haymitch is like just drinking and sort of being very laissez-faire about everything, whatever. And Peeta and Katniss are like, no, this is serious. This is like, we're going to go into this arena. We need your help. And so they try to make a point to Haymitch that he needs to take it more seriously. And at least in the books, it's when he makes some comments like, oh, maybe, like, do I have some actual fighters this year? Because there's kind of a difference in quality of tributes between District 12 and, like, District 1, for example. Do you want to explain the difference?
I don't remember. I think there are some districts where people train to be tributes.
Exactly. That's it, yeah. There's district...
like a sports team, yeah.
Right. So technically, it's illegal to train for the games, but people obviously...
Well, you can volunteer, right? So.
Yeah. People do it anyway. So District 1 and 2... And sometimes, it seems like sometimes they also consider the District 4 in that, but it's kind of unclear. But Districts 1 and 2, those tributes are called the careers, because they're kids that have trained for the games and have waited to be 18 and volunteered. So, you have to think also that in District 1 and 2, if you know that multiple people are going to be volunteering, you never actually have to be worried about being picked for the Hunger Games, because there's always going to be volunteers. So the fear that it causes in the more distant districts is not the same as the districts that are closer to the capital and are the wealthier districts.
Right.
So it's kind of an interesting bit in there. So yeah, so Haymitch is excited about having actual fighters.
Oh, also they always pick one girl, one boy from every district.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what the next thing is.
They get to
the big city with the big lights.
Right, so this is something we talked about before this podcast, is that there's a lot of these science fiction stories or these kinds of stories, is it's always like a country bumpkin comes to the city and shows them.
Mm-hmm.
So Katniss is an example. Another one is Luke Skywalker, who was, you know, raised on a farm, a little farm boy, you know, going back to Superman. Superman came mm-hmm. from space, but he was raised by some nice farm family in Iowa.
Right. Exactly. So it's the same kind of thing. They're like coming from this like backwards kind of situation. And then when they get to the capital, they get this like beauty treatment kind
right,
of thing.
Right. So this, I found this kind of funny almost. So they, you know, arrive there and they have to have a parade. So they had this guy, what, I forget his name, who's like...
Sinner,
right. Yeah. So I see this gay man who's like arranging and preparing them to get ready to appear on this thing. And he, I didn't remember this from the movie, not that he has this idea about, you know, coal, what can we do about coal? Well, fire.
Yeah.
And they do these costumes that are on fire as they're riding down. The, I guess it's the parade is in the, they're going in chariots and stuff.
Yeah, Senna. Who's Senna played by in the movie? I think he's played by Lenny Kravitz in the movie. And Senna's a recurring character in the later books as well. Yeah, he's very, like, he's, like, less intense than the other people in the Capitol. Like, like Effie Trinket, for example, is described as having, like, big pink hair, and some of the other people have, like...
Oh, the guy who does the interviews, what was his name?
Oh, Caesar, Flickerman.
Right.
Caesar Flickerman. Yeah, him too. He's got like powder blue hair and blue eyeshadow and like all these things. And Cinna is described as just having brown hair, brown short hair, and gold eyeliner. And that's like his whole description. And just kind of being like very chill. And he has this like really good idea. So in the past, Katniss describes how people from District 12 had always been dressed in like coal miner outfits and like looked kind of stupid, and there was one year where the tributes were just totally naked but covered in like ash.
Coal dust,
coal dust to represent coal or whatever. And so, and Sin is like, yeah, well, coal, what do we do with coal? We burn it. So let's set you on fire. It'll be good. Yeah. So he does. It's good.
Makes an impression.
It makes a big impression. They go down in their chariot, they get everyone's attention, and Haymitch or Cinna? No, it's Cinna. Tells them just before their chariot goes out to hold hands.
Right.
So, and they're the only pair of tributes that are holding hands of all the tributes.
Right.
Of all the 24. Which ends up being significant. So that's, they're starting their strategy that way.
So they have the pair of parade. There's the interviews, right?
Then there's the, I think the next thing is the interviews?
Right.
I don't remember the order. Is the interviews next or is it training next?
It's both. It's like training is in the day and then preparing for interviews as well.
Something like that, yeah. So I forgot the order exactly, but I think it's so training first, because she doesn't find out. She doesn't figure out what the strategy is until the interview. If they don't tell her.
I see.
Basically.
Right.
So they do the training. The training's just like, you know, daily training, whatever. They're prepping to perform in a secret room for the
game
makers.
So the game makers are supposed to, like, give them... like scores or something, you know, or which determine kind of sort of what your chances might be. And when they train with the other tributes in this big training gym, they don't necessarily want to reveal what their strengths are, right? So that's what Haymitch tells them.
Right.
So they learn other stuff.
Right, they learn like knot tying and...
Camouflage,
yeah. Oh, and we find out from the camouflage one that PETA used to decorate the cakes back at the bakery, so he's actually a really good painter, pretty much. And he's able to paint, like, his arm to make it look like with mud and stuff, to make it look like a tree branch or something.
Right.
And he's like, you know, I can camouflage, yay. And Katniss is like, okay, who cares? Nobody cares, PETA. So then they end up having this, like, private session with the game makers where they're going to get this score. They go, you know, in order, those 24 tributes. They start with District 1. So
District 12 is last.
District 12 is last. Katniss is second to last. And by the time she goes in for this evaluation...
Well, demonstration is really...
Yeah. Game makers are bored.
Yeah.
Right? They're not paying attention. They all have, like, food up on the dais where they are, and they're just not paying any attention to her. So she gets her bow out, and she's shooting stuff. It's really cool.
But she's showing how that she's good with the bow, because prior to that, she wasn't revealing that.
Exactly. So she's, like, showing them how good she is, and they're just not paying any attention. So what happens when they're not paying any attention?
So, well, she noticed there's a pig with an apple. Mm-hmm. And when you have a bow and arrow and an apple, you know, what do? You naturally shoot it.
Exactly.
So she shoots an arrow into the, you know, this pig, into the apple, you know, into the apple. And, of course, that certainly draws attention.
Right.
And I think this was done the same way in the movie.
Yeah, it's very similar in the movie. So the pig is like a big roasted pig that's up with the game makers. So she shoots into the crowd of game makers, pretty much. Which is bad. But she hits the apple and nobody else, so it's okay.
And then she says, thank you very much, and leaves.
And she walks out. So after that, she's convinced that she's going to get like a super low score. Right. And she's surprised they haven't killed her yet because she shot the game makers and all these things. And then the scores are revealed.
Right.
And
she's like at the top.
Oh. She gets an 11. Yeah. She gets the highest score out of all the tributes. The next highest is a 10, which I think is Kato, or one of the district ones. Mm-hmm. So she gets an 11. And the thing is that the training sessions are kept secret. So none of the other tributes know why she got such a high score.
They don't know what the demonstration was.
Yeah. Right. So they're all like, oh, what's going on? Then it's the interviews.
Right, then they have the interviews, yeah. So they get all dressed up. That's mm-hmm. kind of what I found kind of out of place, where the book spends a little bit, for my taste, mm-hmm. too much time about, you know, the dresses and the makeup and that kind of stuff.
There's definitely things throughout the story that are jarringly out of place. And I'm not sure if that's purposeful, like to draw that juxtaposition between like glamour and violence, or if that's—I don't know. I'm not entirely sure.
I assume it's because she's a girl.
I don't know. I don't know if it's because it's not like there isn't just time. I mean, I guess there's part of it too is that it's from the point of view of Katniss, right? So Katniss is going to talk more about her process of getting ready than Pete is, because like she doesn't know what Pete
well,
is.
Well, yeah, of course.
She's not there. But you know I think that the juxtaposition of things like the kind of reality show aspect of it with the like seriousness of it might be like a purposeful. It's trying to make a point, but it's not. But it's trying.
Like it's entertainment for everybody, except the tributes.
Yeah.
There's this. I don't know. There's some philosopher who said that, you know, that boys kill frogs for sport, but frogs die in earnest.
Oh, that's true.
So this is similar kind of a thing.
So they had the interview. And Katniss is really bad at talking to people and being social and being charming.
What did they tell her to do?
They couldn't figure out what to do. Haymitch is just like, I don't know what to do. They test her out trying to be sarcastic. They make her try to be nice. They try all these different things. She can't do anything. And
I think they make her talk about Prim.
Right? Well, Cinna tells her to pretend she's talking to him. Right. And so that's how she is. And then Caesar Flickerman, the interviewer, does ask her about Prim at some point, I think.
Right.
So she gets through her interview, no big deal, and then Peter goes.
Right.
And how's Peter's interview?
So Peter's interview, all of a sudden, they asked him about, so it was the girl you left in your district that is like special.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, there is a girl, but she wasn't left.
Mm-hmm.
And Katniss essentially falls off her chair.
Yeah. And the crowd goes wild.
And she didn't know this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So she kind of turns all kinds of red, blue, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
And she's somewhat embarrassed. And
right. And so then afterwards, they when they get to their floor in the hotel, basically, she pushes him and yells at him for, you know, saying that he's in love with her on live TV. And she's like, you know, you made me look weak. How dare you do this? And Haymitch stops her and is like, he just did the greatest thing he could for you. He made you look desirable.
Right.
Because now if he wants you, everyone else does. And this whole kind of star-crossed lovers thing
right.
begins to take shape.
Right.
In terms of like that this is going to be their strategy to pretend. And up until this point, they had held hands on the chariot. They were told in training to stay near each other's side. You know, they were kind of always kept as a pair.
Right.
Which is different from the other tributes. So they're able to kind of play this angle that gets them a lot more attention than the tributes from District 12 normally get.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So the next thing that happens...
The next thing is the arena, no?
Yeah.
So yeah. Basically the most... I suppose most people saw the movie, but basically the way the games start is they get put on the arena where around the cornucopia, which is like a... Mm-hmm. This horn-shaped thing with the weapons and supplies, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, all the tributes stand around it, and then when the game starts, you get a chance to grab something. Mm-hmm. But what did Haymitch tell them to do?
Haymitch told them to turn and run away from the cornucopia because it's a bloodbath. Because there's all this stuff there, and what happens is all the tributes, all people...
The stronger ones will...
Yeah, they all run at the stuff, and the stronger ones just kill tons of people there. And, you know, Cadmus is good with a bow, and so when she's entered into the arena, she sees that there is a bow and
quiver. Right, so I think the way it works is like they get lifted on these platforms to the arena, and right. They have like, I don't know, 10 seconds to stand there, and then they go.
Right. So she sees that there's like weapons and stuff there, but it's kind of far, and she could get to it, but could she get away from it and all these things? And
also, she sees Peter telling her no.
Yeah, Peter looks at her and waits, shakes his head, like, don't do it. And she kind of does like a half, she kind of meets it halfway. She runs and grabs a few supplies that are close.
Yeah, she grabs a backpack.
Right.
And, well, what happens is that she goes for a backpack, and some other kid goes for a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the kid, the boy goes, they both grab it together. The boy has some weapon and starts, in the movie at least,
mm-hmm.
He's about to hit her, and then she gets hit with a knife by...
Yeah, Glimmer, by Clove.
Clove.
Clove is the one that throws knives. Yeah, so he gets killed by Clove. And so, then she throws one at Katniss.
Right, but Katniss has the backpack, so the knife goes into the backpack. So she says, thank you for the knife.
And yeah, she runs away. And then she runs. And then Katniss spends, like, many chapters and many days looking for water.
Right, so that was also advice from Haymitch. He said, find water.
Right.
First thing, find water. Run away and find water.
Right.
And the arena this time was, like, a woody kind of area with some like woods and stuff, so which is kind of like Katniss's playground because she used to spend lots of time in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And so she eventually takes a while to find water, which is actually what happens is right to the cornucopia there's a lake.
Right, so there's a source of water right next to the cornucopia, and for a while Katniss thinks, oh no, is that the only source of water?
Right.
Because there's, and you learn in later books that in some games they limit the source of water, so the kind of things that force tributes to interact with each other.
Right, and you this it happens in this one too.
Yeah. So she... And this is the thing where pacing is kind of ineffable in books and movies. I find the pacing in The Hunger Games to be 98% of the time very good. I think it's very action. It's very like go, go, go.
There's right, you want to continue reading.
Right, there's not a lot of filler. There are moments, though, when I don't need to know the color of Katniss's urine and that it's brown because we're on day 3 of not having water. Like, I get it, you don't have water. There was some editing that needed to happen. And also the number of times Katniss describes what she's hunting, how she's hunting it, how she cleans the body, how she cooks, all these things. It's like, tell me one time and then just next time just say, and then she ate some rabbit, you know, like just the details needed to be edited down. Not because the story was too long, but because maybe that would have left some word space for like describing things.
You don't get a good sense from the text what the arena was like, what the woods were like. It's just like generic woods,
right.
Generic stream.
Exactly. A
couple of generic rocks, you know.
Exactly. So there was, so that you spend multiple days with Katniss being thirsty, and it's very boring.
So the other interesting thing is because she's used to working, doing stuff in the woods, when she spends a night, she climbs up into the trees,
mm-hmm.
and he ties herself in.
Right.
So she's up there. And I think the backpack that she had a sleeping bag so she could stay warm and stuff when she slept.
So she's glad that she kind of disobeyed what Haymitch said. Which, again, sounds like it should be getting at something, but then isn't. It's very... We'll get there. So a couple of... she eventually does find water. There's a few interactions with some people. She sees another tribute light a fire in the middle of the night and get killed.
Right.
Because the fire, obviously, the other tributes could find the person. She overhears a conversation with some of the tributes and with PETA.
Right, but isn't... When what happens when they chase up a tree?
That's later.
That's later?
Okay. Yeah, so first it's the overheard conversation, then it's the Tracker Jackers. So the overheard conversation, she's in the tree, and they don't realize she's up there. And it's the careers, so the people from 1-2...
Right. Strong ones.
Right, the strong ones, and PETA together.
Which is, she's kind of surprised by that, taking it back.
And she thinks, in her, you know, because we're in her head, so we know what her thoughts are, she thinks he's betrayed her.
Right.
And that he's just been acting this whole time, and he's, you know, with the the careers for himself, basically. And he says to the careers, you know, oh, you know, she's close by. That was one of her traps back there. Like, let's keep going. And she hears the careers talking amongst themselves, saying, you know, oh, let's just kill him. And then they say, no, he's the best way to get to her. So she thinks he's helping them track her.
So then, one of the things that they that was present at Cornucopia is like supplies, food, and things like that. So the couriers collect them all, and they keep them in the like a little camp, and they have a booby trap, the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So what does Katniss do about that?
Well, she does. That's later. That's after she meets with Rue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens next? So that.
I just finished listening to the audiobook this morning, so my recollection of this is like so I think very high.
I think the next time is when they chase up the tree, right?
Tree, yeah. The next is the tree. So what happens with the tree?
So she runs into the careers, basically, and they start chasing her, right? Mm-hmm. And she's really good at climbing trees. She only has a knife, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all the weapons she has. So she starts climbing up a tree, and like one of the boys starts going after her. But she's a much better climber. She can climb much, much higher. Mm-hmm. And basically, the boy cannot climb that high because the branches will not hold him. Mm-hmm. Right. So they said, well, let's just leave her up and we'll just camp under the tree. And eventually, she has to come down.
Right, right. And Pete is down there with them. And he's like, yeah, just wait her out. At some point in time, she describes herself as being 80 feet up in this tree.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's way higher than it looks in the movie. It's so, so high up. So, yeah, so she's, like, way up in this tree. Oh, and she had been burned, right, by then? Yeah, because she gets the medicine. Yeah, remember there was the fire. So one of the things is the game makers they control
the environment.
You kind of get the idea that the entire environment's artificial. And she was too far away from the other tributes. So they had set part of the forest on fire. She gets injured, and then she runs into them. So she's got, like, a burned leg, and I don't remember if she gets the... She gets medicine for it eventually, that Haymitch sends her.
Right.
But I don't remember if it's when she's in the tree or if it's later. But
it might be when she's in a tree.
So she's kind of, she's injured, she's stuck in a tree. You know, oh, what happens? What do you do? And she notices one of the other tributes, who's a girl named Rue, who's from District 11, who's 12 years old.
Right.
And she's up in the trees too. What does she point? Do you remember what she points out to Katniss?
Yes, she points to this nest of...
Tracker Jackers.
Right.
Yeah.
What are they? What are those?
The Tracker Jackers are genetically mutated wasps, basically. And the story contains a few of these, what they call mutations. That's like the word mutations, but with an extra T. So it's mutations. And it's like a very deadly form of bee, basically. That a few stings give you like horrible hallucinations. But you may survive, but more than that, you're gonna
die,
and they'll follow you.
Right.
So
they get angry, and
it's very hard to escape from Tracker Jackers. And the nest is conveniently right over where the people below are sleeping. So
Katniss takes out a knife.
Yeah.
Which has a little serrated thing on the other side, and starts slowly cutting the branch. And did she wait for the night, or?
I forget. There's some issue where she starts and then she stops. I don't remember why.
Right, because she was waiting for like a right point. So at some point she cuts it, so the nest falls and basically starts right smack in the middle of the camp of the couriers and stuff. So they all run away as much as they can. Mm-hmm. And Katniss gets bitten as well.
She gets stung a couple times.
Right.
So she gets stung a couple times. She starts to hallucinate. The Tracker Jackers end up killing two of them. The girl Glimmer, who was from District 1, Clover's from District 2, and the girl from District 4, who we never get named. Glimmer had the bow, and so Katniss is able to get the bow and arrows.
Right.
And then she spends a few days hallucinating things. And one of the things that she remembers is Peeta telling her to run and to go, something along those lines, and like Peeta saving her pretty much. But it's part of like a series of hallucinations, so she's not really sure what is or isn't real.
No, but there was at one point that Peeta saves her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where she comes down from the tree and she knows to go to retrieve the bow, but some of the couriers are there. There's somebody there still, and Peeta attacks him, and I don't think he kills him, but he disables him or lets gives her enough time so that she can escape. And then Peter can also needs to escape away from those from the careers because they're not going to
stand right, exactly. Yeah. So Peter saves her. But when she wakes up, she's like not sure if that was a hallucination or if that really happened. She's kind of confused by all of that.
And Rue also comes into picture here now.
Shortly after. So she wakes up from her... So she basically the venom has to pass through.
Right.
And she has to kind of just deal with it for a bit. And then shortly thereafter, she comes into contact with Rue. Right. And she offers Rue food. And they make an alliance.
Right.
And she says straight up to the reader, you know, Rue reminds me of Prim.
Right.
Right. She's 12. She's a little girl. She needs protection.
And she sings.
And she sings, yeah.
Right, so they can make noises of the mockingjays,
mm-hmm.
and the mockingjays can make their noise, sing their songs.
Right.
And is this when they decide, she decides to go and do something about the food supplies?
Yes.
Of the careers?
Yes. So the two of them were just talking about the fact that the careers kind of have an infinite food supply, and they devise this plan that basically involves Rue setting a series of fires in the woods to lure the careers away from the camp. And then while the couriers are away, for Katniss to go in and figure out a way to destroy the food.
Right.
There was just kind of like this broad concept of like, somehow destroy it. So Katniss goes, and they're in the process of doing this, and the food's all in this like big pyramid, like all the supplies.
Right, but it's also there's like the booby traps like around it.
Yeah.
Bombs or something. How does she find that out?
So it's, what happens is she goes and she finds it strange that they leave just one person to guard everything. And it's like one of the weaker kids. It's like the kid from District 3. District 3 is where they make like a lot of technology. So she's like, it's weird that he's part of their alliance and it's weird that they leave him behind to guard everything. Everything's in this like beautiful open pile and it's just like sitting out there. There's nothing really going on. And she sees another tribute, who she always refers to as Foxface, who's a very smart tribute, go towards the pile of food, and Foxface very carefully jumps in certain places to get to the food. And what Katniss realizes is that when the tributes were first brought into the arena, they're brought up on those platforms, there are bombs around the platforms that go off and will kill you if you step off the platform early, basically. Once the game starts, the bombs are disabled, but it looks like they've been dug up.
Right.
And she realizes, oh, the kid from District 3 is from the technology district. You know, what if he...
Oh, I see, right, so he can set them up.
What if he they dug them up and he reactivated them? And that's why he's getting the protection of the careers, because he was the one he's the one controlling the bombs. So she figures out, I just need to activate the bombs. And so she does.
Right, so in the book, there's something like hanging...
Mm-hmm.
And she figures if she can make a drop, the bombs will go off.
Mm-hmm.
But is that kid even there when she does this, or no?
He is. He's like on the other side, though, of the cornucopia.
Okay.
So he doesn't get killed by the explosion. Right. Yeah, she like makes apples or something fall, and it activates the bombs, and everything explodes.
Well, in the book, what she does, she makes... This thing is tied on the rope,
mm-hmm.
and she hits the rope with the arrow, and that cuts the rope, and the thing falls.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still a bag of apples. But yeah, she makes it fall, and it activates the bombs, and boom, everything explodes. And then the couriers come running back, and they think something's gone wrong. They kill the boy from 3, and now they have no supplies. Whoops.
Hunger Games.
Yeah. And then what happens?
So then she goes to find Rue,
mm-hmm.
right? And... she finds that Rue is caught in this trap,
mm-hmm.
and just as she gets there, one of the boys from the other group, the one with the spear, comes,
mm-hmm.
and he spears Rue,
mm-hmm.
and kills her, and she kills him.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like he throws the spear, and she shoots him as the spear is flying, and Rue gets hit, and Rue dies there, and so she. She's kind of very somewhat upset by that, and then she makes mm-hmm. like a little funeral, because what happens is then every night they announce who's dead,
mm-hmm.
and they come and take the body away,
mm-hmm.
right? So she puts like flowers around and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
and as a result, later on, I mean, people from District, I guess, 11,
mm-hmm.
Sent her some
stuff. Bread.
Some
yeah.
food, yeah.
They send her some bread from District 11, and yeah, she's real upset about it.
So the other thing, actually, we forgot to mention is that when and the scene happens where Peter helps her defend, so Peter gets injured because somebody just slashes his leg.
Yeah, right. So then she's alone in the woods again, and I guess it's at this point that the announcement is made about the rule change. Right, the change in...
Right, right. So they're saying that two people can win.
Right. So there's an announcement that there can be two victors if they're both from the same district. So the only pairs left are Clove and Cato, who are both from District 2, and Katniss and Peeta, who are both from District 12. So Katniss immediately
starts go looking for
Peeta. And she kind of like, she's like, well, he must be by water, so I'm just going to walk along the river indefinitely. So she goes, and she manages to find him. And where is Peeta hiding?
In the mud or something. It's like he being master of baking.
Yeah.
He camouflaged himself so much that you couldn't see him.
Right.
Right.
So he's just straight up like laying next to the river. But she, you know, he's like totally invisible, basically. And he is in bad shape.
Right. He has got his legs getting infected. Mm-hmm. So, and it starts raining. So they find like a little cave to hide in. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to cure him a little bit, you know, giving him some food. And she realizes she's going to need some medicine.
Right.
And I think she's saying, you know, I wish Haymitch would get some sponsors to get some medicine for me, but nothing.
Mm-hmm. And then they have like some touching moments in the cave or whatever. And she's like,
well, she says, you know, might as well, you know, play this destructive lover. So
so she kisses him or he kisses her or something. And immediately they get like a little tin of soup sent to them. And doesn't Haymitch send a message with one of them? Or did she imputes the message, I forget.
He sends her something that she interprets as a message, right?
Because basically the point is she gets the hint from Haymitch that you need to play off of this angle to get what you need from me.
Right.
So that's what she continues to do, basically.
But there's like rain, it rained for a couple of days and they're kind of stuck in this cave.
Yeah. And then he's not really getting better.
And so then the game makers came up with this thing that said there's going to be something at Cornucopia, something that you need, you just have to go get it, right? The one.
Right, because they're trying to make everyone interact with each other.
Right.
Exactly. So Peeta says, no, you're not going, you're not risking your life for me, whatever. He's dying at this point. He's got like an infection that's not going to stop. You're not risking your life for me, whatever.
Oh, right, and that's when she gets the sleeping pills.
Right. Haymitch sends her, sleeping medication, and she sneakily feeds to Peeta food or something like that. So she drugs him, and he falls asleep, and she's able to go to the cornucopia to see what there is. So there's
So there's a table with a bunch of things like that. You know, each tribute has something that they need, and so she's sitting in the woods at the edge of the clearing where the cornucopia is and trying to decide what to do, and all of a sudden she's fox face run out from the cornucopia, grab her bag and run away, and she says, god damn it, that was so clever, I wish I had thought of that. And she says, I have to go next because otherwise, you know, whoever gets there before me is going to destroy my bag or my little thing. So she runs out and then everybody else starts running out.
Now, this is a point where I don't quite follow the logic here, because Katniss, at this point, is like knows that she has to fight Cato at least at some point. That Cato's kind of been the big bad the whole time.
Right.
She's got her bow and arrows, and the cornucopia is surrounded by woods. I mean, it's in a clearing, but it's like she could still snipe from one of those trees. So I don't really get why she didn't.
I don't think she could. You know, there was still a bunch of them left, so that... You know, she needed the medicine and it would be and was easily destroyed, like if somebody else grabbed it.
But that's what I'm saying, is like she could have left Thresh. So Thresh is the other boy from 11, so he would have been the pair with Rue. She could have left Thresh alone, because Thresh didn't seem to be anyone that was going to be bothering her. But the only other two would have been Cato and Clove. So she could have easily killed the two of them while they were on their way to their backpack. You know what I mean? Like, that was like a really easy shot.
They probably... Both of them would not have run out. One of them would run out.
So she could have killed Clove and avoided the subsequent almost dying from Clove that we're about to describe.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess it's sort of the fact that all of Katniss's murders are kind of either self-defense or, like, mercy killings, not, like, more active murders.
Right.
But, I don't know, regardless.
Right, so anyway, so she says, well, I better go. So she runs, and then Clove is after her, throwing knives.
Mm-hmm.
So she turns around and shoots one arrow at Clove. It injures her, but doesn't kill her.
Right.
And Clove actually gets to her, and they start rumbling in the thing, and Clove is stronger, and it's like... Clove finally gets a pin down and says, okay, now I'm going to cut your pretty face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's trying to select which knife to use on.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, boom, she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out, it's different in the movie than in the book.
Mm-hmm. Because, I haven't watched the movie in a while.
Yeah, in the movie, there is no rocks in the movie. In the movie, the Trish just grabs her and just throws her against the cornucopia, breaks her neck.
Oh.
In the movie, the Trish just smashes her head with a rock.
Right. Yeah.
And he says to Katniss, yeah, I guess he knows about Rue, what happened with Rue, and that she was defending him. So he says, I'm going to let you go this time.
Right.
And he does. So she's able to grab the bag and get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so
the
we're
bag,
down.
Of course, contains medicine. So.
Right. And so Clove is dead. We're down Clove. Then Katniss goes back and medicates Peeta.
Yeah, he gets better.
Doesn't die.
So the next thing that happens is that, you know, she has to go hunt. So he's recovering, and he's not strong enough just yet, and she has to go hunt because they have eaten all the rabbits,
right.
And squirrels,
mm-hmm.
and she tells him to be quiet, and
he's not.
And he doesn't know how to walk quietly to the woods.
And she's getting annoyed. She's like, I'm just trying to hunt. He's making all this noise. She makes him take his boots off.
Right.
He's still making all this noise. And she kind of just like wants to put him somewhere so that he'll like not bother her basically while she's hunting. And he insists on gathering. He's like, if you're going to hunt, tell me, like, what roots to gather or whatever, and I will gather and I'll be useful. I'm not just going to sit somewhere. So she's like, all right. So she leaves him to gather some stuff, and she goes off and hunts a few things.
So does she hear some noise or something?
It's different in the movie, this scene. In the movie, she hears a cannon, and she thinks it's him, and she runs back, and it's not him.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. So we forgot to say about the cannon. When some tribute dies during the games, a cannon goes off.
Right. And sometimes they miss the cannons, like if there's like a lot of
noise.
Oh, you know what we missed? Thrush died. Thrush dies while they're in the cave during the rain. So after the cornucopia, when she goes and gets the medicine, when Peeta is still healing, there's a few days, that's when there's like a lot of rain and thunder and stuff. And that's when Thrush dies. They miss the cannon, but they see so at the end of the days, they announce
they project,
in the sky who's died. They see that Thrush died.
Right.
So it's assumed Cato killed Thrush. But they're in the woods, and so she goes back to where Pete is supposed to be, and she sees, like, the backpack and some berries and stuff, but she doesn't see him. She kind of freaks out.
Right.
She finds him. He's fine. And she starts yelling at him. He's like, I was just picking berries. And she's like, you can't leave and stuff like that. And at this point in the story, she's...
Well, so then they find Foxface.
Right, so then they hear cannon, and
they also see that there was some stuff, like, stolen or fiddled with her.
Yeah, some of the food in the backpack is like, somewhat eaten. And Katniss thinks Peeta ate it, but Peeta didn't. And so what ends up happening is that the berries Peeta was picking turned out to be Nightlock. And Foxface had been surviving by picking off of others and, you know, assuming those things were safe, if the other tribute was going to eat it.
So what happened was Peeta collected them, and he put them, like, together with the food.
Mm-hmm.
So Foxface assumed they were good, that Peeta didn't know, being, you know, baker.
Yeah, exactly.
And she ate them, and
she died.
And she died.
And so she gets taken out. They end up keeping some of the Nightlock berries, in case they're useful later or something like that, and they do end up being useful later. Good job, Katniss. So then we're down to Peeta, Katniss, and Cato.
So what did the game makers do to force them together again?
The dogs.
No, but...
Oh, they take the water away first.
Right, so they have to go to the lake.
Right.
Right.
So they take all the other water away. Katniss and Peeta start heading towards the lake. And they run into Cato.
Well, no, so they're sitting at the lake, they got some water, right? And all of a sudden they see Cato running at them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so Katniss shoots him. But the arrow bounces off.
Right.
Because clearly the thing that he asked for in his thing was some kind of like body armor kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they're getting ready to kind of fight him, but he just runs past them.
Right.
Like in panic almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, do they see the dogs or something?
Then they see the dogs chasing him, yeah.
The
mutts.
Dogs, I mean, they're like the the way they described is the very like mutant wolfish,
and this was
nasty, gnarly things.
Right. This was a big difference between the book and the movies that a lot of people didn't like when the movies came out, which was that the mutts are described. They're probably one of the scariest parts of the story. Really, yeah. The mutts are described in the book as being dog-like, but also standing on hind legs, using their paws like hands. Like, it's, like, kind of interesting. And then when Katniss gets closer...
They're not really just dogs. It's, like kind of monstrous wolves. Like wolfmen kind of a thingies.
Yeah. And when Katniss gets a closer look at them, she realizes that there's 22 of them. And they're each designed after one of the fallen tributes.
It will be 21.
21, yes. Math.
Off by one there.
Hashtag math.
Well, so the way to get... I think she shoots one or two of them.
Yeah, and then she's like, the way she figures it out is that there's one that's blonde. And she's like, this is a weird blonde dog. And then she realizes that the dog has green eyes.
Yeah, it takes like a while. Like, she sees the dog's eyes. Mm-hmm. Well, so what happens is that they run on top of the cornucopia, which is like a structure.
Right.
And the dogs can't quite climb after them.
Mm-hmm.
So the three of them wind up there.
Right.
Right. And as the dogs are trying to jump up and trying to grab it, she gets... good look at like one of them, and the eyes seemed familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And then she realizes it's a clove or glimmer. It's a glimmer, right?
Yeah, and
that part doesn't really. It's not in the movie at all.
No, and she thinks that they're glimmers. She's not, or it's unclear whether they're actually glimmers eyes,
right,
or they're just mutated dogs that are made to look like glimmers eyes. But it's obviously like a very psychologically traumatizing image.
Right.
And she's like, do they? And I think Peeta says, like, are really their eyes? And she's like, she's like, maybe, but she's more concerned with, like, what about their brains? Like, do they remember?
Right.
Who, do they hate us because they remember us killing them? Or do they hate us because they, we're still alive or whatever? And then she sees the one that's supposed to be Rue, and it's, like, the smallest dog or whatever. And the dog's, like, just as vicious as the other ones, and it's very upsetting to her and everything like that. So then they're on top of the cornucopia.
Right, so... She still has like an arrow or two left, right? Because she only got like a dozen arrows or something.
Yeah.
And trying to push each other off, right? And then Kato grabs Peeta, right? And he says, you can't kill me because if you kill me, we're both going to fall in into the dogs. And so he's holding, grabbed Kato by the neck, right? Mm-hmm. And he, he's strong enough so he can just snap his neck if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's holding him, she doesn't know what, she's just holding her bow to trying to shoot. And Peeta kind of draws a little X on the guy's hand that's holding him.
Right.
Right. And she realizes what he means. And second later, Kato realizes it, but it's too late. So she shoots him arrow, like, into the guy's hand.
Right.
That's holding Peeta. So he goes,
And Peeta pushes him. Yep.
And ta-da! End of the games.
Well, it takes a few days for Kato to die.
Does it?
Yeah, so Kato...
No, she shoots him, I think, because she wants him...
So Kato gets, like, he falls to the dogs and they expect him to, like, die, but he's got, like, the full body armor thing happening. So he kills a number of the dogs, and then he eventually gets, like, so maimed that he can't anymore, but he's not dying, and clearly the Game Makers are controlling the dogs, so they won't let the dogs finish him. So they spend like a night listening to him, like moaning and dying in the cornucopia, and then finally she mercy kills him. She like leans over the cornucopia and shoots him.
Right.
And then the dogs disappear. Right. Woo! Yay!
And ta-da! Surprise! Rule change. It says, okay, no, we meant when we say that two people could win from the same district, we meant just one. So go to it. So Peeta says, okay, well, just kill me, You're the better one of the two of us, blah, blah, blah. And she says, no. What did they do?
Well, Peeta says, you got to, because they've got to have their victor. And she goes, no, they don't. And she pulls out the Nightlock berries. And she's like, they don't have to have their victor if we both eat some Nightlock. That's it. Because, and realistically, she can't imagine going back to the district without him. And he won't let her die. Right. So she's like, whatever, we'll just suicide pact this and we'll be fine. And they count down from three. 3, 2, 1, they put the berries in their mouths, and the announcer comes over and goes, wait, stop! May I present the winners of the Hunger Games? And they spit the berries out and everything.
Right.
And then then they win the Hunger Games. Yay!
I guess that's kind of the end of the movie. In the book, there's a little bit more about what happens.
There's a little bit more, yeah. The movie kind of covers it, too. This is more the launching off point for the second book and the rest. But the idea is that, you know, now they both survive. They get out. They get treatment, etc. They do their, like, interviews they're supposed to do. But Katniss is warned by Haymitch, you know, you've pissed off the Capitol. They don't like being made to look a fool of. They don't like basically being out of control.
Right.
And you kind of forced their hand, where they had to, you know, they had to give in to your demand as opposed to them controlling you. And that's not the point. And so, you know, you kind of have a target on you at this point. So she has to, Haymitch tells her, you know, you really have to play up this star-crossed lovers thing, because your only way you can get out of this alive is if you say, you know, I was so madly in love that I'm not responsible for my actions.
That's right, yes.
That, you know, that saying that, like, this suicide pact wasn't an act of rebellion, but was just an act of true love or whatever. That's kind of when it's revealed at the end, when Katniss and Peeta finally get to actually talk to each other about it outside the arena, that Katniss has been playing the whole time and Peeta has not. And then that's kind of where the story ends.
Right.
Very dramatic.
And then there's the other two books, which I haven't read. I have no intention of reading.
Oh, they don't get much better. But let's talk about this one and then...
So in terms of dystopia, on our scale from Brave New World to 1984, this is, I would say, it's more 1984-ish. It's kind of unpleasant. You know, the life in the scene is very similar, like to Winston's life. Mm-hmm. Very unpleasant kind of a thing.
I think it depends what district you live in.
Maybe.
You know, I think for District 1, it's probably a lot more like Brave New World, because they have all of the nice stuff.
Except you have the human sacrifice.
But they have the volunteers, right? And they win so frequently. Their districts win so frequently. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of stuff that's like 1984, there's points where Katniss describes having to show no emotion on her face so that people don't know the secretness, the lack of communication abilities.
Being observed all the time.
Being observed all the time, definitely. The violence, the fact that the government can have so much violence done to you so easily.
Right.
And on such a regular basis. So I definitely think it falls more towards the 1984 end of the scale. But again, it's that interesting juxtaposition of the dystopia and the utopia aspect of it being so closely linked. Because I think someone in District 1 would probably think they live in a utopia.
I don't know about that. I mean, we don't know enough about the other districts. And the backstories, again, it's very kind of unclear. It's I suppose if you, just telling it from point of view, one character who's kind of embedded in this world, mm-hmm. what did they know? Just, they taught them something in schools, you know.
Right.
Who knows mm-hmm. what is true, what is anything. Yeah.
So the later books get basically what happens, spoilers for the next two books that came out 10 years ago. What happens in the second book is basically there's another Hunger Games that Katniss and Peeta end up being in again for various reasons. And this moment where...
Is Haymitch in them as well?
No. Peeta volunteers to take so that Haymitch doesn't have to go. What happens is because of this, like, this moment of, like, the Nightlock thing becomes, like, a beacon of hope for the districts as a sign of resistance. And the idea of the Mockingjay pin... And this whole idea of the Mockingjay, the Katniss sort of becomes this image of the resistance. Right. And so book two is about 75th annual Hunger Games and basically rescuing the people from it. Mm. And then book three is about the revolution and taking down the government and the fall of Pan Am. The close point of view works well for the first book and does not work well for the second and third books. Particularly the third book, where you're trying to tell the story of an entire revolution of an entire country from just Katniss Everdeen. It's not broad enough. It's not a broad enough lens for the story that they're trying to tell, right? That she's trying to tell. So it's sort of interesting. I wish there were multiple points of view, because I think that would have made the story a lot better.
Well, maybe she can still do it.
Apparently, the advertisement. Apparently she's coming out with a book sometime in 2020, that's the prequel. Right. It's the story, I guess, of the original revolution. So that'll be cool. So you talked to me before about this being an American type of story.
Right, so I grew up in Poland, right, in a country that was occupied during World War II. Mm-hmm. And culturally, there's a lot of World War II type of themes in its art, and its movies and literature, mm-hmm. and it's based on real people's experiences. Mm-hmm. So to me, this story kind of feels very cheap in many ways. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, there were cases where people really, you know, gave their lives to save others or fought, or, you know, and they're just regular people who were just not soldiers or anything, mm-hmm. or chosen or anything like that. They were, you know, really heroic, and this is kind of very American, kind of almost like a Western kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of American war movies are about, you know, some heroic bunch of soldiers who do something amazing, and because America, the United States as a country, was never invaded, never under occupation. So mm-hmm. Maybe if you look at some of the movies about American Indians, you know, who mm-hmm. kind of went on the brunt end of this kind of thing. So on the other hand, it also reminds me a little bit, you know, like you can think of it as what we do today is we have armies with volunteers, you know, mm-hmm. tributes who go and fight, and then, you know, we don't fight to the one person who wins the thing, but it's still, it can be dangerous. It's mostly young people who get mm-hmm. to do it and to suffer potentially from it, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I know, I get what you're saying in terms of it being, it does feel very American, and I wonder if part of that is like the almost reality TV show kind of aspect of it as well.
Right.
That it's kind of like, it's so artificial. Like the danger is completely artificial, right? There's no reason the Hunger Games has to happen. And I guess that kind of gets back to what we were saying.
Well, it's entertainment, right? It's like gladiators, gladiators mm-hmm. in Rome, they were entertainers, you know.
Yeah.
Except they also died.
But yeah, I do. I agree. And I think that the kind of lightness with which the various murders are committed is sort of interesting to me, because, you know, certain things really impact Katniss. You know, their father's death really is like a life-changing moment for her. Rue dying is something that she...
Right, and I think really one thing that happens to Katniss is towards the end of the story, she realizes that winning, you know, in the beginning you think, oh, winning is going to be great. Mm-hmm. And she realizes it's really terrible, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're the person, the last person of this group of people, you know, and they're all dead, and you maybe killed some of them, and it's terrible.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to train someone else.
And she kind of understands why Haymitch gets drunk all the time.
Exactly, exactly. And she starts to think about how, like, it will be her job to train the next tributes.
Right.
And she's going to be training kids that are going to go into the arena and not come back. You know,
PTSD.
Yeah. The third book especially has quite a lot of exploration of Katniss's PTSD that's done relatively well. It's probably one of the better things that Suzanne Collins does in the books. You don't get it here yet, because she's still kind of going through the formative experience. But that is definitely something that is explored.
I guess if you were a teenager reading it, that would be kind of exciting mm-hmm. story to read. As an older person, I don't find it quite as exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like even Gato, you know, Cato. He's like painted as a bad guy, but why?
Yeah.
He was the strongest, right? And he...
I don't know. And I think that the different... I was a teenager when I read it. Because mm-hmm. I think I was 19 when the movie came out.
And what did you think as a teenager?
I was so invested in the romance plot. I was this time through 0% invested in the romance plot. And I was... When I saw the movie... So I found the movie and the books to be very different. The books is very clear that Katniss does not have feelings for Peeta, that she is playing this up for the cameras.
Right.
I thought, when I saw the movie, I thought that the romance was, like, legitimately forming between the two of them. I didn't pick up on the fact that it was fake.
It's not clear to me that it's fake. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. she was faking it, but maybe not. And mm-hmm. what I found confusing when I saw the movie, what's his name? Gale. Mm-hmm. Was just like nothing.
Well, he's not really in the first book. He's like...
Yeah, but I mean, he was in the beginning. He's like a buddy from... God knows where they go. You know, mm-hmm. they set this whole thing up and it's just...
Yeah.
So that's very confusing.
Yeah, I think it's definitely... I think part of the problem is that so this is one of those things where I don't know if this is a problem of Katniss's psychology or the author's psychology and understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. But this is the issue is that the understanding of gender roles is very limited within the story.
Well, actually, you said funny, it's kind of reversed in many ways, the gender roles, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, so there's kind of an interesting commentary with between Katniss and Peeta,
right,
where Katniss is strong and violent and kills things and...
Super hunter,
but can't talk to people, has trouble with her feelings, all these things. And then Peeta is, like, painting cakes and making bread and wants to talk about...
Gathering,
having all the romantic feelings, you know, all these things. So there is that kind of swap, which is really interesting. But in terms of how the characters relate to each other, they're very much in boxes, where it's like Katniss thinks, like, you know, at one point she thinks, I can't possibly really be with Peeta because, he can't possibly really be happy with me because I don't want to get married or have kids. So there's no future. Like, as if that's, like, the only possible future. When we hear about Gale in the beginning, she tells us twice in the same chapter, there's nothing romantic between us. There's nothing romantic between
right.
us. As if it's impossible for two teenagers to have a relationship that is not romantic, right? And it doesn't quite fit with, like, Katniss's character that there are these, like, very strict understandings of what roles people play. By the end of the story...
It's like, you know, this is not something possibly you would even think much about when you're 16, you know.
Right, it's weird. And particularly with Katniss being so rebellious, the fact that her mind is then so limited about what her relationships with people can be like
right.
is very odd. And by the end of the story, she makes a comment that with Gale, no, there's nothing romantic between us, but maybe there could be. And it's like, you haven't seen him in this entire book. What changed between the beginning of the book and now? Except that the author has decided that there should be a love triangle, you know? It was very
yeah,
odd.
I find that confusing in the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Here, to me, it sounds like, you know, she sort of knows she has to pretend that she loves Peeta. I don't think she's necessarily sure whether she does or not at the end, but, mm-hmm. you know.
I think that what it is that she's exceptionally caring, and she has a natural aspect about her where she... cares and protects people.
Right.
We see it with Prim,
right.
with her mother, with Rue, and Peeta falls into that pattern.
Right.
But because Peeta is a boy, it's hard to fit him into either in her brain or in the author's brain. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It's not possible to fit him into that platonic caring for pattern without there being a romantic
right.
aspect to it. And that's the part where it's like it's unfortunate that couldn't have been explored more as platonic. Very powerful friendship.
Right.
With either Gale or Peeta.
Right.
And because that would be really interesting, but the book kind of falls back on more basic
right.
understandings.
So was this science fiction?
Yeah, I think so. It's a dystopia.
It's definitely a dystopia.
It takes place in the future.
Does it?
Yeah, because it's in the United States. It's in a future United
okay.
States.
Yeah, I guess they have trains and stuff.
Well, we know geographically.
It could be alternate history.
Could be, you know, that's true. You're right. I don't know that it takes place in the future. I mean, they have, like, some technologies and things.
Yeah,
nothing
tremendous, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the biggest problems we have with the story is that I don't quite see it as a piece of literature, you know? And I think that's a very...
Well, I mean, it's a fun story to read.
It is, and it's kind of ineffable to say something does or doesn't have literary merit. I don't quite... I mean, like, I think I've spent my entire life trying to explain what things have and don't have literary merit. But it just don't... It's like it's got the bones of having a point, but it doesn't quite...
Well, I think it's... I don't want to say one-dimensional, but it's basically just a story
yeah.
of this in this world, and there isn't much beyond that. It's like it's more concerned with... like your normal human emotions, like, you know, oh, she likes him, he likes her.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're in this weird place where you have to kill each other for entertainment, it's just thrown in it to add spice to this, but without any deep investigation.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like, this is normally the part of the podcast where I would talk about themes, and I don't really have any, because I could extrapolate themes out of it, but is the story really making a point?
Right, it doesn't, right? So, like,
yeah.
you know, if you look at Return from the Stars, right, mm-hmm. was kind of this alienation.
Oh, my God, identity was a huge theme
right.
in Return of the Stars
and
the meaning of home. I mean,
right.
But, like, what's the difference? Why is it that that, like, and I think this is the greatest question in, like, literary analysis, is, like, what makes that, you know, what makes Solaris, like, a great piece of literature?
Well, because it's, first there's the imagination, it's like the descriptions of things, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he describes things that don't exist, and he makes them appear in your head, mm-hmm. right? Here, there's nothing that doesn't exist, mm-hmm. right? And ask some interesting questions, like, you know, what does it mean to be an alien? What does it mean to communicate? Mm-hmm. Kind of very fundamental in some ways. Here, it's a fun story, but...
Well, I think an interesting thing to think about, too, is people often compare Hunger Games to Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And you've read their Harry Potter yeah. books, yeah. I think Harry Potter does have a lot of themes in it, more so than Hunger Games.
Well, Harry Potter is such an intricate world. You know, that she
this becomes an intricate world too. There's a lot of details that come up in this, particularly in later books. But it's not on. I agree with you that it's not on par with Harry Potter.
But
they're both kind of straightforward A to B to C stories.
Platform 33 and a third. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, the first Harry Potter book is like a kid's book, mm-hmm. and yet still there's like, you know, this whole world created.
Right, and there's is quite a bit of literary merit, I think, to Harry Potter, even though Harry Potter, the writing itself is very simple.
Well, Harry Potter is interesting because as the book progressed, the writing got more complex.
Right.
Because I guess she expected the readers
the audience older. Got more complex, exactly, yeah. Which was a good choice. But I mean, even you talk the seventh Harry Potter book, we're not talking James Joyce over here. Still pretty much A to B to C storytelling. And it's not, you know, I'm not knocked over by the prose at any point in time. But I think it's a combination. You know, you don't have to just be writing really fancy to have a story.
Right, but I mean, if you're putting people in the arena to fight to the death, you would think there would be something else you want to consider, mm-hmm. some philosophy maybe. You know,
right, like, exactly.
And then there's just for touch of it, just in the end, where she realizes that, you know, what she has done is just because she won. It's not such a great thing in the end. Mm-hmm. But
it doesn't really make the point. So something else that I wanted to mention was the representation of race in the Hunger Games as well, and this ties to the movie. And this is another thing where it's like there's the bones there of the story wanting to make a point, but the story never makes that point. In District 12, there's a pretty clear, there's like different races in District 12, and there's the Seam. The people that live in the Seam are described as having darker skin, darker eyes, darker hair, or having gray eyes, because Katniss's father had gray eyes. And then there's like the merchant class, which is where her mother was from, and her mother has blonde hair and blue eyes and is white. So Katniss is described as having dark hair, olive skin, and I believe gray eyes like her father. And then Prim has blonde hair, blue eyes, and looks like her mother. So Katniss is a mixed race lead. I wish the movies... And I love Jennifer Lawrence. She was the one who's cast as Katniss. Yeah. I love Jennifer Lawrence.
I love Jennifer Lawrence too.
She's a great actress. They should have cast someone who is mixed race for Katniss because she is blatantly... like the first three pages of the book described as being mixed race. She describes herself as having olive skin. She's not green. Olives are green, brown, or black.
No, it could just be the dust.
Oh, it's the dust. That's what it is. Oh, of course. So, and it's one of those things where that's like a really interesting aspect of District 12 and the culture of District 12, but it never goes anywhere. There's never any...
Well, even like the district that Rue was from, right? There was like farming, something like that from the south or something.
Right, but it's all black people in District 11. And because Rue is black and Thresh is black. Well, and in the movie, when we see some of District 11,
In the book, Rue is black, right? I don't mm-hmm. think.
She is in the movie, too.
I know she's in the movie, but I don't know, it's clear in the book that Thresh is black also.
They don't describe
I was actually surprised when I saw him in the clip.
Oh, maybe she doesn't describe him. I don't remember. I saw the movie, maybe because I saw the movie first, I just imagined it, but you're right, maybe they don't describe Thresh. I mean, the biggest thing is that they, if you're talking about what seems to be like almost a post-apocalyptic America.
Right.
And you have these class divisions, you absolutely have the opportunity to explore race divisions as well.
Right.
And doing it in a science fiction context allows you to explore and critique what we experience in real life. And it could be very powerful and very interesting, and it just, like, doesn't.
Right.
It is, like, 0%.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, possibilities for all kinds of different things to get deeper. And so mm-hmm. I guess that's what we mean by literary merit. It's, like, when you explore some of the ideas a little bit deeper, just beyond just the story.
Right.
Right. I mean, from this book, the only kind of thing that comes through is at least when I read it, that Katniss is kind of ambivalent at the end about winning. It's like, you know, it's not the great thing that she may have thought in the past.
Because she can never go back to her old life.
Right.
There's no way for her to go back to her old life, yeah. So I don't know, themes. It's up to you guys. It's up to you, audience, what the themes are.
Right, so next time I think we're going to read Handmaiden's Tale.
Yes.
Right, so
I have not watched the show. Have you watched
the show? I haven't seen the show. Okay. I haven't read the book. Okay. So I'm going to read the book. We're supposed to read it for our book discussion, so...
Oh, perfect.
If you can finish it before then.
Well, we'll see. Yes, or Handmaid's Tale, and then will that be it for dystopias? Or did we decide to do some short stories?
I think we should do some short stories. I have to pick some.
Okay. And then, okay, perfect. So
that'll, and then we can do dystopia.
Wrap
dystopias
up.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah. dystopias everywhere. Definitely. All right, those were our thoughts and feelings on The Hunger Games. I think we're all done.
Yep.
All right, thank you for listening to History in Reverse, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I always get nervous.